Are you working? What kind of work do you do?
This is the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Touchdown, baby!
Now, here are your hosts, two-time All-American punter Drew Butler.
Mark Richt would like Drew Butler to hit it a mile in the air. And he did. What a kick.
And the SEC's career leader in touchdown passes and completions, Aaron Murray.
Touchdown in stride as he crosses the goal line. Put it right on his hip. What a throw.
Now, with the latest from around the SEC and the world of college football, it's the Punt and Pass Podcast.
Get to the house, sideline, pylon. Touchdown, and the Dogs are on the board first.
Victory is mine. Yeah, surprisingly, I've been lame.
Welcome into the Punt and Pass Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler. Join alongside my co-host, Aaron Murray. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Punt and Pass. I am at Drew Butler. Aaron is at AaronMurray11. And head on over to puntandpass.com, the number one destination in the world of college football on the internet. It's got everything you need to stay up to date. It's got our YouTube page, everywhere the podcast is distributed, our picks, our merchandise, our blog. It'll be a great spot for you to keep your college football knowledge up to date as the season is over. Aaron, that's right. The 2020 season is in the books. Alabama crowned national champions last night after dismantling Ohio State. 52-24. What a season it's been. Let's break down this game. Did you stay up? Did you watch it? I think you and I were pretty much on the same page here. Nobody was touching Alabama this season.
Yeah, man. It was an interesting start and not a great start for Ohio State. Obviously, they were kind of, I wouldn't say limping into the game, but you know, Justin Fields is banged up. They're missing a couple guys on defense. And then Trey Sermon goes down there in their first possession, and he's out for the game. So you're like, all right, the game, as soon as Trey Sermon went out, because to me that was that was my X factor for Ohio State to make it competitive is, hey, you got to be able to run the football. You got to dominate the clock. You got to keep the ball out of Alabama's hands. And that's the way you can make this a new 30-something point game for each team. Because if it was going to turn into a shootout of Ohio State having to compete drive for drive, up tempo with Alabama, it just wasn't going to happen. So as soon as he went down, I was like, damn, this game just got a little less interesting going forward. But I mean, they valiant effort there through the first quarter, tied it up 7-7. But Alabama, man, that offense, Steve Sarkisian is the man.
Genius last night. Very impressive.
Once again, everyone's always saying, oh, he has all the talent, all the talent, all the talent, all the talent. Those dudes at times were running wide open.
Yeah.
Devontae Smith was wide open. This dude won the Heisman. You know Ohio State.
He won every award. How do you let that happen?
Because Sarkisian schemes it up so well, man. The dude is a beast. He put a show on for everyone that had Texas as a possible landing spot as a recruit for the second signing day. They were watching that game licking their chops like, damn, man, we're about to have him as our head coach. Like, look at that. Look how fun that offense is to be a part of. So Steve Sarkisian, first off, you're the man. Alabama offense, Mac Jones, you're the man. Najee, you're a beast. Devontae,
unbelievable.
What you're able to do last night, just absolutely stupid. And for Ohio State defensively, how dumb can you be? I mean, they were just – I tweeted it last night, how much single high coverage I saw in that game and just leaving their dudes on an island, whether it's a linebacker – on Devontae with no help, or cornerbacks with Devontae with no help. Like, the dude won the Heisman.
Yeah.
Like, give him some respect, man. Like, stop playing so much single high coverage. So, awful, awful game plan for Ohio State, I thought, on both sides of the football, offense and defense.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I was kind of dumbfounded as well, because Devontae Smith in the first half was getting the ball almost every play. And you're sitting there watching TV going, well, aren't you going to guard him? And then he gets that great 40-yard touchdown pass where they have a middle linebacker in coverage on Devontae Smith, and he just waltzes right past him. Great throw from Mac Jones.
How does the safety over top not have help?
Those are the things, to me, where it just goes to your point. Ohio State on defense, I know they were trying a little bit of everything in the first half, but clearly – it was not working. Mac Jones, 36 of 45, 464 yards and 5 touchdowns, BCS and college football playoff championship records. Najee Harris, 22 carries for 79 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground, 7 catches for 79 yards again, 1 touchdown in the air. And Devontae Smith, in the first half, 12 receptions, 215 yards and 3 touchdowns. touchdowns. You mentioned it, the Sarkisian game plan, what he was able to dial up to get these guys out in the open. Simply put, getting your playmakers the ball in space, the pre-snap motions, the orbit motions with the misdirections to get the linebackers in bad situations, to get the slot DBs in bad situations, and trusting Devontae to obviously catch the ball, make a miss, and go score touchdowns. It was an offensive clinic. Aaron, tell me this. Go ahead.
I want to go, when you talk about the getting those guys in space and open, I want to give a little bit more love to Mac Jones too, because
oh, stud.
All those passes that he threw, especially like some of those bubbles, you know, when, you know, whether it's a two-man bubble, three-man bubble, faking the orbit motion like Devontae did on the touchdown and coming back out, the ball placement on all those passes just were perfect. Absolutely perfect. Because you're taught you have to put it 1 foot in front of the numbers and catch it, keep those guys running. How many times do you watch college, even NFL, where teams are running the bubble concept? You got numbers, you got blockers, you throw the bubble where the ball is a little bit behind, the receiver has to stop, catch it, then has to kind of then regain momentum. And by that point, you got linebackers, you got safeties, and it's a tackle for loss or it's a 1 or 2 yard gain. Not one time did I see of any of those throws last night, any of the bubbles, the now routes, or those fake orbits, for the touchdown, everyone was perfectly thrown. Everyone.
Yeah.
Not one time did the receiver have to stop, start. It was catch it in stride. Like the ball was literally handed to them as a running play. They caught it, boom, took it for positive yards and touchdowns at times.
I mean, he's been doing that all season long. And I think that was the biggest difference for me throughout the season when comparing him to Kyle Trask, comparing him to Justin Fields, really even Trevor Lawrence. I think Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones are very similar in the way that they throw the football. Trevor can probably make a longer throw it with a little bit more velocity. But look at Justin Fields last night. I mean, I know he was banged up, but throwing the ball, far less accurate, not as good as touch. And Kyle Trask, you and I have been talking about that all season long. Okay, I want to mention one thing, though, a couple things, because we need to get to the Ohio State aspect of this game as well. This, of course, was Alabama's sixth national title since 2009. Nick Saban gets his seventh, surpassing Bear Bryant to become the all-time national champion winningest coach in college football history. I've been saying it since November. I think this is the greatest team ever. I think 2020 Alabama is better than 2019 LSU. We can talk about that in a little bit, but I want to ask you, because Mac Jones, clearly, I mean, you were tweeting about it last night, like, first-round pick. Like, he's got it down to be an NFL quarterback. I want to kind of flip this on its head and say Sarkisian getting a ton of credit, as he should. Where do you think this does? What do you think this does for the prospects of Tua Tagovailoa in the NFL? Because you're sitting there going, man, it seems like any quarterback can go into this system, Aaron, and put up these insane numbers, especially when you have an embarrassment of riches like Jalen Waddle was back last night. I know, very limited. Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, Mechie. I mean, there are dudes all over the field. So I guess my question is this. Yes, Mac Jones looks phenomenal. Yes, he's going to get drafted to go to the NFL. But when you look at somebody like Tua Tagovailoa in the NFL, and he hasn't had that much success in Miami, are you sitting there going, I don't know, maybe a product of the system?
No, let's give Tua a break here. I mean, he's coming off a major injury, yep. And he played half a season, for goodness sakes. And he played for the first part of the season that he did play. He played pretty darn well, actually. So, you know, I know towards the end it wasn't great, but he's a rookie. He played only a handful of games. And like I said, coming off a pretty significant injury during his last season at Alabama. So I don't want to write off Tua now. I mean, he's a young kid with a lot of football left ahead of him. We'll see what happens with this DeWan, this Watson deal, and does he go to Miami, and then does Tua go to Houston? I mean, I don't know, Deshaun. I mean, we'll see what all that happens. But anyways, regardless, I'm not writing off Tua just yet. I think he's a great talent, good arm. I kind of like Mac more though. Obviously, yeah. Mac's a bigger kid.
No, I agree.
I can take the pounding a little bit better than what Tua did. I mean, look at all the injuries Tua suffered in college. Banged up a little bit here, and we'll see. But I Mac's arm strength's just as good. I think he's a little bit more accurate than Tua is. I don't think it's a thing of obviously the talent around and Sarkisian help. Let's not get that mixed up. That it helps out significantly, for goodness sakes. But when you watch Mac and you watch his pocket movement, when you watch where the ball is being placed and the accuracy, like I said, it's not like he's a 75% completion guy And these balls, like I said, some of these passes are back shoulder and they're off, or the receiver's having to catch and stop and slow down. Like, he's literally putting it in A++ positions over and over and over and over again. That's not easy to do on air. Like, routes on air, that's not easy.
He's
doing it in game situation. I just think his accuracy has proven to me that regardless of who the OC is or who the receivers are, this kid's just flat out good. Like, he's just a good, accurate quarterback that has great pocket presence. And I know he's not super mobile. I know he's not crazy fast. And I know that's what a lot of NFL teams want nowadays. But, you know, like I said, he's savvy enough within the pocket where he can beat you there and you don't have to worry about it.
I thought Fowler said something really interesting talking about when they met with Sarkisian before the game. He said Sark loves that Mac Jones has fast eyes. Yep. And I think you can definitely see that when you're watching the game last night, how quickly he goes through the progressions, how quickly he notices who's in best position to get the ball, and then, of course, being able to deliver it with a ton of accuracy. ESPN wrote an article, and this is perfect. Devontae Smith was uncoverable. Najee Harris was unstoppable. And Mac Jones, impeccable. I mean, it's the truth. Mac Jones said he thinks they're the best
three
team.
The three-man monster that Herb Street kept showing over and over last night.
ESPN's graphics are, I mean, even on Monday Night Football, it's like, who? I want to know what kind of substances those graphic designers are taking before they pitch that.
I know you're all about the Nickelodeon. I love the Nickelodeon stuff.
That was great. Like that. And then, you know, Saban said it's the ultimate team.
I cut up.
What cut up?
The end zone slime machine going on at Nickelodeon.
It was fantastic. Saban says this is the ultimate team. There is more togetherness on this team than almost any team we've ever had. They've had to overcome a lot and persevere through so much this season, and they've done it magnificently. I mean, you can't really argue with that. And again, he's talking about all the COVID stuff. Alabama, clearly, week to week, unstoppable, 11 straight SEC victories, ran roughshod over Notre Dame, and then, of course, did the same to Ohio State to be claimed national champion. Let's touch on Ohio State, okay, because you mentioned it. A little bit banged up. Justin Fields banged up, some COVID issues. They were missing 13 players. Was this game going to be delayed? Hey, let me just say one thing. Every team has had to deal with that all season long. And this is the first time Ohio State had to deal with it. And coincidentally, unfortunately for them, it was before the national championship game. I was on a radio interview yesterday, and they were asking about Ohio State. Is it an advantage that they've only played 7 games? And I said, hold on one second. They have only played consecutive weeks once all season long. Now, of course, they are banged up after a physical game against Clemson. Now, of course, they do have issues with a potential COVID outbreak on the roster. Every other team in America has had to deal with that all season long. That was what the sacrifice was for these student-athletes to get to the end of the season. And I think last night it was a celebration of the student-athletes, and I think Coach Saban said it very well also. It is a hat tip to them for their commitment to wanting to play football, something you and I said back in August. Why are we trying to play college football amid a global pandemic? Because people want to play football. It's as simple as that. And Cole Kubelek, your partner of at SEC Network, tweeted out, last night was the 567th game of this 2020 season. Amazing. I mean, just amazing from everybody, support staff, administrators, coaches, most importantly, student-athletes. So hat tip to them. It's always so much fun to talk about college football on Punt and Pass with you, Aaron, with our audience. So I think it was a fitting ending to the season last night. I want to touch on one more thing about Ohio State, too. I know I'm kind of all over the place right now. We talked about it on the preview show on Thursday. How's Ohio State going to win? Trey Sermon was going to be a big deal. That's what you said. Trey Sermon, right? If you're going to slow the game down and try to keep the ball out of Alabama's hands, you're going to have to get Trey Sermon going out of the backfield in the pass game and, of course, running the football and moving the chains. He goes down, looked like he hurt his collarbone, AC joint. I hope he's okay. Yeah. On the first drive, I was shocked to see them keep the same game plan without Trey Sermon. You would have thought at that point, hey, let's blow this thing open, chuck the ball down the field. We got to get in a scoring match with these guys. I know Master Teague was the starting running back, but, man, I was scratching my head going, what the hell is Ohio State doing?
Yeah, I mean, listen, the teams that scored points in Alabama this year, Florida and Ole Miss, what did they do? They spread it out. And over and over again, you saw with Ohio State, you saw 12 personnel, so one back, two tight ends. Like, they try to play almost old school football versus Alabama, even going down the, that fourth down call. I mean, why is Justin Fields under center? Put him in the gun. Get a threat of an RPO or zone read where he can run the football instead of just trying to run it down the throat of Alabama. So I think they try to be a little bit on both sides of the football, offense and defense. They're like, hey, we're going to win the line of scrimmage. I mean, that's our thought of how we're going to beat Alabama. We're going to run the football. We're going to get in heavy personnel with more tight ends. And then defensively, we're going to put an extra safety in the box, stay in more base defense, and try to win it that way. Football has evolved, man. If you're going to want to win games nowadays, especially against teams like Alabama this year, you better go, go. You better be able to score a ton and spread them out. That's what Florida did, and they scored a ton of points. That's what Ole Miss did. Up-tempo, spread you out, and throw the football. I mean, Olave was a non-existent for most of that football game. 8 catches, 69 yards.
Yep.
That's nothing for him. Like, he needed to have a monster game. He needed to have a Devontae Smith type game, double digit catches, 150 plus yards. Like, that was the way that they're going to do it. Run it, play action pass, and then take some shots and spread it out a little bit. Them just getting in the 12 personnel without Trey Sermon, your stud back.
What are you thinking?
I just didn't get that at all. Once he went out, you got to mix it up a little bit. You got to throw it. You got to spread it out and go from there. And then, like I said, defensively, mind blown with the inability to mix it up on that side of the football. So for these guys to be paid that much money and for those crappy game plans on both sides of the football was kind of embarrassing if I'm Ohio State, honestly. And I think Alabama was just laughing, just saying, all right, you want to play old school football? That's fine with us. And you want to play single high coverage? That's more than fine with us because we will throw it all over the ballpark the entire football game. So I think, Nick, you know, that goes back to, you know, we said at the beginning of the day, or last week, and I said on a couple of shows as well, if you want to break down every group, offense, Alabama, defense, Alabama, special teams, Alabama, coaching, Alabama.
Yeah.
Coaching, huge in that game.
So big.
The play calls from Sarkisian and just the overall game plan, offense, defense, was just 10 times better than the plan that Ohio State came into that ball game with.
I mean, we all knew what Ohio State was up against with Alabama's offense. Ohio State knew better than anybody. We talked about it on Thursday's podcast. Mac Jones, Davey O'Brien Award winner. Devontae Smith won literally every award that you possibly could. Najee Harris, Doug Walker, offensive line, Joe Moore, Landon. They won every award possible. With that being said, it's the national championship game. You got to be prepared. Alabama put up 621 yards of offense against Ohio State. That is the second most allowed in school history for Ohio State in the national championship game. It's crazy. Justin Fields needed to have another perfect game like he did against Clemson. I think a lot of people kind of understood that was a lot to ask. He was 17 to 33 for 194 yards and a touchdown and added 67 yards rushing as well. So, hey, it was an uphill battle to start. Alabama absolutely closed the door. They covered as first half favorites. I gave that out on our Bet Online All Access show. They covered as game favorites. Aaron, that closed at 9 easily. I think they were up by 18 at half. They closed that easily, 4.5 to 6.5. But get this. Okay, we talk about gambling a lot. We talk about spreads, lines makers. This game closed for a total over under 76 points. I don't get how Vegas is so good at totals. It's absolutely unbelievable. Guess how many points were scored? 76 points, right? So a lot of people before the game saw it at 75, 75 and a half. If you bet over, you won. But if you bet before the game, it was at 76. It's a push. It's absolutely mind-blowing how that works. But you wish for a more competitive game. I think that was asking a lot because everybody knew how good Bama was. Now you're going to start hearing expand the playoffs. I heard a great stat this morning, okay? 17 college football playoff games since its inception 7 years ago have been won by Alabama, Ohio State, or Clemson, okay? Expand the playoffs, they say. I mean, fine, expand the playoffs, but I don't think that's necessarily going to change that, right? If Alabama played the number 8 ranked team or got a bye and the 6 seed got through and played the 6 ranked team, they'd score 70 points against them. I don't know if that's going to change it. Expand it, that's fine, but don't expect Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State just to go away.
No, they're not going to go away. I think that the reason why I've slowly jumped on this expand the playoff is more for the recruiting part of things. Because if you're a kid who wants to play for a championship, and if you watch the playoffs, you want to commit to Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State.
Yep.
If I'm a kid that lives in California,
yep.
Why do I want to say why do I want to play in the Pac-12? They don't play in the playoffs. I just think you're really hurting some of these programs, especially the ones out west, because they haven't been in, and now it doesn't look like they'll be in because all these kids are leaving. I mean, look at the quarterbacks for Clemson and Alabama for next year. 5-star kids from California that want to play for championships. And in their mind, they're like, hey, if I want to play for a championship, I better go to the Southeast. I better go to Clemson. I better go to the ACC. I better go to the SEC. Or I go to Ohio State. So I think if you want to make things eventually more even and start working towards that, I think expanding it will help because you're going to, like I said, it opens up recruiting a little bit more to these kids' minds saying, okay, I can stay home in California. I can stay home in Washington, Oregon, whatever it is, and still have a chance to play in the playoffs. Like I don't have to go across country to do it. So I think it levels that out. And then eventually those teams start getting some of those guys to stay home, better teams, a little bit more competitive. It's not going to happen overnight. It may take 3, 4, 5 years to get level when it comes to recruits, but at least I think it's going to get there. But if we continue down this path now, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State are going to be in it every single year forever. Like, it's just, how are you going to knock them off?
I mean,
how are you? I just don't see it happening.
I agree with you.
They're
right?
Going to get the best recruits every single year.
Yeah.
And because kids want to play for championships.
Yep. And they'll have a one-off, you know, like LSU last year, you know, Ohio State in 2014. But these schools are going to continue to recruit at a high level. The coaches are there. The facilities are there. The support is there. That's how college football works, people. So you would just hope it gets a little bit more competitive.
I talked to Ryan McGee this morning, who's on ESPN, and we had the similar discussion. And you know, he said another thing is, you know, those schools out west do need to invest more. Like you go out there and like, oh, do you see our new brand new, you know, $10 million facility, whatever. He's like, yeah, well, that's as nice as, you know, Kentucky's facility.
Yeah.
You know, that's not Alabama. That's not LSU. That's not Georgia. Like they got to step up on a lot of fronts to keep those kids at home. One, got to be more competitive. They got to find a way in the playoffs. But two, you got to spend money, man. These kids want the glamour. They want all the cool stuff. And if you're not willing to spend the money, you ain't going to keep those kids in state.
Hell yeah. Who doesn't want cool stuff? I want cool stuff. Everybody wants cool stuff.
I want Georgia's new facility. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's...
We had a 10 by 40 indoor facility.
I know. We had a lunchroom as a facility.
That was the worst money ever invested in Georgia history.
Yeah. I don't think new athletic director Josh Brooks would have okayed that if he was in that position because
that wasn't even McGarity. That was
Damon Evans.
That was Evans.
Yeah. I mean, that was simply you couldn't use it. It was called a multi-use room, and we ate lunch in there. That's what we did. And had
we couldn't even do full walkthroughs because you had to put a curtain down so defense could get one side, offense could get the other.
It's crazy.
We could throw slants and hitches. That was it. That was great. When it rained, that's what we got, some really good work in at slants and hitches.
That's why you were so good at the slant and the hitch.
That's funny.
That is funny. What'd you think about the tweet last night that was going viral once again? It was the old Devontae Smith tweet from 2016 saying, I am officially decommitting from the University of Georgia. Did you see that going around?
No.
I was like, that hurts a little bit. But again,
Georgia's probably like, man, all the fans are probably like, oh, we should have had Justin Fields and Devontae.
Of course.
It's like, oh, shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know, just be happy with who you have and find a way to win with what's on the roster now. But, you know, I did see, I think you retweeted, Joe Klatt has Georgia number one heading into next year.
We're going to get
that. Offensively, but I'm a little worried about the secondary. I mean, holy smokes.
Yeah, a lot of attrition there.
Revamp secondary for the Dogs.
Probably get a transfer, I would think. Let's touch on that in just a second because it's a good segue to Georgia. I wanted to talk about this first. Is there some sort of vindication here for Kirby Smart? Okay, and here's where I'm getting with that. Justin Fields last night, I mean, a non-factor against Alabama. A non-factor. And that is the hurdle that Kirby Smart has in front of him. He's done everything except beat Alabama. And if he would have beaten Alabama, he'd have a national championship right now, right? Gotten a rematch in the SEC championship game, wasn't able to close it, got another rematch this past year. Of course, we all know how that went. In Tuscaloosa. So is this vindication for Kirby Smart about letting Justin Fields go when you look at what he's done with who he's had against Alabama in the past. And yes, this is loser's mentality. So you can go ahead and say that about me right now. But Stetson Bennett this past year, okay? Stetson Bennett, right? We love Stetson on this show. Georgia's fourth string quarterback heading into the season.
Yep.
Was beating Alabama at halftime. He ended that game with 269 yards and two touchdowns. Those are better statistics than Justin Fields. Look at how good Jake Fromm played against Alabama in two goes. Yes, he didn't win those games, but he played pretty damn well against Alabama. And when you and I were at that SEC championship game in 2018, and you were on the sideline for CBS, and I text you and I go, holy cow, Jake is having an amazing game. He was carving up Alabama's
defense. He played better
defense.
Than Tua did.
That's what I'm saying. So everybody's saying, how could you let Fields walk? It's not like after that performance against Alabama, the next season, Kirby's going to go, okay, you're done. Justin Fields, here are the keys. So my question is this. With Fields' incompetence last night, because that's what I'll call it, we all know how Alabama is, and Kirby's success at the quarterback position, albeit without a victory, with Stetson Bennett this past year and Jake Fromm in two goes, do you sit there and go, hey, I don't know. I mean, look, Fields is great and everything, but all you have to do is beat Alabama, and clearly he wasn't cut out for that.
No. God, Drew, I just love you. I mean, that's just absolutely A-quality stuff right there. I think you need to form a tweet and put that out there. For all Georgia fans who
Fromm lost by three, okay, and then seven, right? So lost by three and seven to Alabama. Stetson lost by 17 this past year. Justin Fields just lost by 28 points.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, at Ohio State,
can you please tweet that out soon and just say Justin Fields, for all those who thought he was the answer, was not the answer. And we can finally close that chapter in Georgia football history and just move on.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. I have nothing more to say than that. That was just a quality reporting from you right there, Drew.
All right.
Yeah. Justin was a non-factor, though. I think that's the first thing. And was he extremely healthy? No. But no one's extremely healthy, for goodness sakes. I mean, you know, Waddle was out there hobbling around, for goodness sakes, trying to make plays. And that's a whole nother story, too. I have no idea why he played that football game. I mean, it was I turned the TV on at 7:45 just to get a little bit of the preview show. Like, I was kind of exhausted of previewing the game. So I was like, oh, do you want to turn it on at 7? I was like, no, I'll turn it on when the game starts, pretty much. But I turned it on as literally the teams were running into the locker room. And he's hobbling in there.
Oh, I know.
What the hell is he doing? Like, the kid looks like crap, and it's pregame, for goodness sakes. Imagine when he gets hit, gets his first catch, which was a hell of a play by Mack and a great play by Waddle. And he's just hobbling to the sideline, gets out of bounds. I'm like, take his ass. He got a catch. He has a catch. He's contributed to a championship. We can say that. Now take his helmet and go hide from him.
Yeah.
Like, he does not need to play another snap in this football game. And they kept putting him out there. He made a few catches. Luckily, nothing more serious happened. But every time he was on the field, my eyes went to him. And I literally was praying. I'm not lying. I was praying every time he's on the field, because he's a great kid. I'm like, please don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. Please go. And I know he was cleared and everything was good to go. But as you and I know, when one part of the body is not 100%, other parts of the body start to compensate.
Yeah.
100%. And that's how other injuries happen. When he's favoring his left leg, his right leg has to take over, and that's when other injuries occur. That was what I was more concerned about than anything. That something else was going to go wrong and hinder his future. So, you know, I'm hoping he feels good today. I'm happy if he is, really happy he is, but I thought that was so dumb on everyone's part that Jalen Waddle played that game. Like, you know, oh, I was scared as hell, man.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. That was really kind of head-scratching why he was allowed to do that. I get that he wanted to, but as a coach, you got to look out for your player. It was cool on the flip side to see Landon Dickerson get in there with a torn ACL, snap the victory formation to end the game for Alabama. So, yeah, crazy stuff. But I don't think Kirby would come out and say, I have vindication. I think you can make that assessment. I just looked it up. Yeah. In that SEC championship game, Jake Fromm was 25 of 39 for 301 yards and three touchdowns. Last night, Justin Fields, 17 of 33 for 194 yards and one touchdown. So do with that what you will. All right, Aaron, you mentioned it. The way too early top 25s are coming out. I saw ESPN put theirs out this morning, but Joel Klatt, Fox Sports college football analyst, tweeted out last night his way too early top 25 heading into the 2021 season, and number one are the Georgia Bulldogs. Your thoughts?
They're definitely a top four team. There's no question about it. With what's returning on that offensive side of the football, I'm a little bit concerned on the back end defensively, but you know they've done a great job recruiting. You know they're up there though. I mean, it's going to be them, Alabama. I really like what Oklahoma's bringing back next year, especially the way Spencer Rattler finished the season off.
Yep.
They're going to be up there. I think those are, in my mind, as of right now, and Clemson. So once again, it's the same old teams. You know,
yeah,
Alabama.
Klatt's top Clemson. Five is Georgia, Alabama 2, Oklahoma 3, Ohio State 4, Clemson 5.
Yeah, I mean, that's same old story, but, you know, those are the teams. And a lot has to do with, you know, quarterbacks and potential of quarterbacks. You know, obviously Georgia Georgia and Oklahoma have two guys coming back that finished the season off extremely strong. Clemson with DJ. Played in some games and looked pretty damn good. So I think there's a lot of excitement there at Clemson. And then Alabama is their five-star and see what he can do as a full-time starter. And we just know how good Alabama is. And you just can never keep them out of the top five or
yeah,
four.
Yep.
So, yeah, that all makes sense pretty much right there. So I would, you know, if I had a pick, I'm kind of torn. It's hard not to put Alabama at one because of just what they've done every single year of being able to reload. And we'll see what their new OC can do. And
Bill O'Brien. Wow.
I don't know about that hire. I really don't, honestly. It's kind of a head scratcher. Not a super sexy hire, I think. But obviously, I think he has a good relationship with Saban because of the tree and relationship between Alabama and the Patriots, going back to Bill O'Brien's time there.
Yeah.
Don't love the hire, but we'll see what he can do. Obviously, he'll have tons of talent. And for any offensive guy, you want to go to Alabama because you know you got a bunch of studs and just look what Sarkisian just did.
No doubt. ESPN put their way too early top 25 out, and they have Clemson 1, Alabama 2, Oklahoma 3, Georgia 4, Ohio State 5. I think those are pretty much interchangeable at this point. You can put wherever anybody. You've got to see who starts, who transfers, injuries
who leaves,
during the spring,
who leaves,
who goes to the draft. But think about this, too. Okay, going back to Klatt's top 5, top 10, okay? First week of the season next year, Georgia plays Clemson in Charlotte. According to Klatt's top 10, that's number one versus number five. And Alabama plays Miami in Atlanta. According to Klatt, that's number two versus number eight. So we're going to get smacked in the face with great football.
I'll be interested to see what Derek King, the issue is. I think that game would have been a lot sexier if Derek King didn't just tear his ACL.
Yeah,
so,
good point.
You know, he should be healthy by then, but still it's not. You won't be 100% to make that thing a little bit more interesting.
No doubt. No doubt. Going to be very interesting. You would think it's going to be a lot more normal heading into next season as well,
yeah.
God willing. All right, let's wrap this thing up. I got one more thing to touch on. A lot of great news coming out of Athens for the Georgia Bulldogs. It seems like the motto next year is hashtag unfinished business. You have a ton of guys declaring that they are going to be coming back to school. Jamari Sawyer, probably one of the most notable. I mean, he certainly would have been a draft pick. Leaders of this team are putting their hand back in the pile and saying, we're getting ready to go. I think that's kind of a rallying cry around JT Daniels, the belief and the trust that those guys have in him. I would hold off at the moment as saying JT is the clear-cut starter for 2021. I'm really interested to see how Brock Vandergrift does throughout spring. Of course, he's already on campus now, how he competes for that starting job. But you saw the offensive line look pretty spotty in the Peach Bowl. JT Daniels throwing off his back foot a lot on the move. So I would be a little bit hesitant to say that's a done deal. I'm very glad he's coming back. Leads me to this point, okay? It's great when these guys announce that they're coming back because it builds excitement around the program, right? Recruits see it. Coaches see it. Most importantly, the fans see it. People go, oh, hell yeah, 2021 is going to be awesome for Georgia. One of our former teammates who's now a host at 680 of the Fan, Hudson Mason, put a tweet out. Did you see this tweet last week? Okay. I saw it, and I reread it, and I was like, wait, what? Okay, so this was after Kiaris Jackson had come out and said he's coming back, which was great. I mean, Kiaris busted onto the scene this year. He became a real safety blanket for Stetson Bennett first and then continued that on with JT Daniels as he took over. And Hudson Mason got on Twitter and said, quote, we have officially reached a new low in the look at me social media culture. We have now projected undrafted free agents making social media announcements about their return for 2021. It only gets worse from here, folks. Saddle up. Now, I had to reread that because I was like, what is he talking about? And I guess Kyaris Jackson and somebody else made a statement that they were going to return. And Hudson said, that's a look at me move on social media. Because I guess they were projected undrafted free agents. I mean, a couple things here that stand out. One, Hudson was undrafted free agent. So was I. I was an undrafted free agent as well in the NFL. And I have a lot of like old man takes. I kind of say like, am I getting crusty? This is the cream of the crop right here. I mean, these guys are announcing that they're coming back to school. Surely fans think that there's a chance they might leave. And their replies to this tweet, I mean, our boy Hudson got absolutely roasted over the Colts. It's kind of unbelievable. I just don't know why you would tweet something like that. Because simply put, it's just drumming up excitement, and guys are saying they're coming back to school.
I think that's the biggest thing. I think it's just continuing to get fans and everyone excited about next season, for goodness sakes. You know, undrafted, not drafted or drafted in this sense, I just think it's more of, hey, he's a good player.
Yeah.
He contributes to Georgia. And we're all excited that he's coming back next year. So I'm perfectly fine with the tweet from Kyaris. I think it's fine. I understand where Hudson's coming from. Like, yes, we all know you weren't going to leave really deep down inside, but it's still nice to see that guys are committed to the program, that they're excited about the 2021 season. So I'm all for guys tweeting about, hey, we're coming back. We're excited. Let's get to work, man. Let's go out there and make this year a special year. I mean, and look at Alabama this year. Those guys, no opt-outs. A couple of guys that could have gone pro last year that decided to come back this season and really say, hey, we're going to put the team over me. And look what happened. They had one hell of a year, won a bunch of individual awards and won the SEC championship game and won the national championship. So, you know, I'm not saying maybe Georgia has that type of talent. Well, it's still TBD. We'll see what these guys look like heading into, you know, next season. But it's exciting stuff. And I think there's nothing wrong with continuing to build excitement because, as we all know, it's all about social media. It's all about the glam and the excitement and the rah-rah. And these kids want to be a part of it. And all get that train moving in the right direction is all I got to say. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, Kyaris could very well be deemed the most improved player on Georgia in 2020. I mean, he had touchdowns over 500 receiving yards, I think three or four touchdowns catching.
He was the main
guy,
like you said. He was he was his dude for multiple games.
This ain't the backup punter making a statement on social media saying, I'm coming back to school. I mean, this guy makes a difference in the outcome of ball games. So I was all for it. And Hudson, my man, let's lighten up a little bit. I mean, go Dogs. It's okay to say go Dogs, brother. So it's going to be exciting. And a lot of excitement is already there, especially with these way too early top 25. So, man, I hope we have a regular offseason, Aaron. I hope these guys get to go home a little bit. School starts next week, I believe, or later on this week. And then, of course,
I think they need to get away from football.
Yeah, get away from football.
Reset,
I mean,
get
seriously.
Away. These kids, like, don't even go to the facility for a couple weeks. No training, no film. Like, go try to be somewhat a normal student for a little bit.
Yeah.
It's been one hell of a season for everyone. Everyone needs to hit the reset button and then, you know, pick it up in February maybe and get things going again with training.
Yeah, no doubt. So hopefully spring practice will be here sooner than you know it. Look, the Masters is 3 months away. Dude, we got some normalcy coming back in 2021, but I am just so thankful that this college football season ended up happening. Again, hat tip to everybody who made it possible, especially the student athletes. I want to give a shout out to our great partners throughout this season. Of course, Prize Picks was unbelievable. Head on over to prizepicks.com, download the Prize Picks app, use the promo code PUNT. Logan Hinton over at Ameris Bank Mortgage. Logan was a great partner as well, and Christopher Bowers from Bowers Insurance Group. Everybody who makes Punt and Pass happen, of you, the listeners, of course. It's unbelievable. We'll keep this thing going. I'll do some interviews. Aaron, I'll text you, see if you want to fire it up. You can catch Aaron daily.
Get some NFL stuff going.
We can do
the draft.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything on the way out, my man?
No. Going to go try to work at my golf swing now that the football season is over with.
I just got ready
every day, so I got a little bit more time on my hands. And goal is to beat Drew Butler by 2022, ladies and gentlemen.
That's a long runway there.
Lofty goal. I set my goals really high. I'm not trying to, you know, be okay. average here. I want to be Drew Butler golf good.
I like that. Well, I can help you there. I can certainly help you there. All right, that does it for us. Be sure to follow us on social media at Punt and Pass. I'm at Drew Butler. Aaron is at Aaron Murray 11. Head on over to puntandpass.com, and we will talk to you later on. See you.